RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 10th episode of the Dark to Light podcast with
Shankly
and Beans. Shankly.
Yes, quite Shankly.
Quite Shankly.
It's the prison edition today. So, but I'm having a good time over here. I just went to a granola bar to grab myself an iced coffee. But, of course, I don't go there for the coffee. I go there for the all-gender bathrooms.
No way.
Yeah. It's not even just like, you know, unisex or anything like that. It specifically says all-gender bathrooms. So, it you know, whatever.
I'm happy to announce that I got a census form the other day. Mm-hmm. And it's all online now, and it's really a lot. It's a lot of questions. It takes a long time. Anyway, long story short, they don't give you any other option but male or female. There is a like what's this click box option, but I didn't click it because I didn't even want to know what they said.
Yeah.
Because what happens if you start getting people identifying as like binary on the census?
I don't know. I could, it's like male, female, or mystery box. What do you want?
Like in Farmville.
Yeah, something. It's like, well, who knows? It's like the magic eight ball.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. I want to say thank you to everybody out there because we got our June numbers in from Radio Influence, and I was absolutely blown away by the unique download count. I was like amazed, right, Frank? We were just like, you know, it's different because like on like a YouTube, you can watch something like 10 or 15, 20 times yourself, or like somebody can watch it 20 times. They all count. But with podcasting, am I correct in saying it's like unique downloads?
Well, with podcasting, depending on what, like, for example, on SoundCloud, that's where I host my my podcast. They'll allow you to track the downloads and also just plays like on YouTube. So they're two different things. So you can specify what it is. So when you zero in on downloads, those are really, really amazing indicators of how many people are watching and consuming, because there's only one time you can download. And I, it's very rare people are going to download the same thing onto multiple devices, you know?
I was just blown away, like, at, you know, I guess people like what we're doing, and I'm so happy about that. I hope it's helpful for everybody, but it is, you know, we did that. We started this like 2 months ago, and the what we've seen happen has been nothing short of amazing. So thanks to everybody out there who's consuming this show every Friday as we kind of meander along this little winding road together, right?
Except for the guy that thinks I talk too much. I says I should talk less than half the time.
Which is crazy. I appreciated he was complimenting me. I appreciated that. But we're co-hosts. This is a co-equal relationship here. If I just wanted to hear myself talk for an hour, I would just, you know, not ever have said, Frank, I need you to do this show with me because you're just, it needs to happen, right?
I'll just raise my hand anytime I want to say something. You pick me if you need me.
Okay. I don't know how that'll work. I can't see you.
It's all right. You'll know when my hand has been raised.
Okay.
I'll say teacher. Teacher, teacher.
I'll pick you. This poor guy now, he's going to know who he is.
Oh, the hell with him. Who cares? let me take the slings and arrows.
I love that line from that speech of his.
Yeah.
It's me. And then I have a really cool announcement too, which I'm so excited about. So I'm working with Your Voice America, which is like the team with Bill Mitchell and Tracy Belmonte and Ann Vandersteel and Brendan Dilley and all those people. And I was in a Walk Away commercial that they did yesterday. They put out yesterday about the Walk Away movement, and kind of announced it then. And I'll have a show with the beautiful Tracy in, you know, coming up. There's a lot more we can talk about a little bit later on, but there's a lot of amazing things happening, and I'm just honored that they asked me to work with them, and they're wonderful people. And I always look for integrity. These people have integrity, like you, Frank. You have integrity too.
Oh, thanks. I'm so happy. I knew a little. I don't know all the details, but I knew that something like this was coming along, and I knew the type of people that you were looking to be working with. And I think this is such a great opportunity, and I'm happy for you because you're joining such a great team of people. So I'm always happy when I see good people get together and join forces. It's like Captain Planet, you know? Just everybody get together.
It's, you know what? It's happening more and more, and it's going to be something. It really is. They've awakened a sleeping giant, and we've got real information that we're going to be getting out to people. So that's what really matters about it. Not that my face is going to be there, but that the information that's coming out is going to be information that people probably didn't know before and could really probably serve them moving forward. And that's what's important to me.
Absolutely.
And fun. Fun is good.
Yeah, and of course you deserve to. You deserve it. You worked very hard. So there should be a little bit of a celebration that it's, you know, your face is getting around a little bit more. You put a lot of time in building a brand, so
wahoo-y.
You deserve it. That's it.
That's a wahoo-y from Tracy. I'm excited. Yeah, it's good. So now that all that business is out of the way, let's talk about some stuff that's going on. I think we should start with this John Solomon article. What do you say?
Sounds good. I just read this a little while ago. I love it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's there's a lot in there, and it would help if I had it up in front of me. There was a lot in this article that he just put out this morning in regards to Operation Crossfire Hurricane, but a lot more too.
I have it up here if you want me to read excerpts. It's not a long article. You just let me know if you want me to get anything out.
I've got it up now, too. Well, let's go through it for people just in case they didn't see it. You know what also, before we go on, too, I want to say? They label John Solomon an opinion contributor. And I mean, I don't think that his reporting is opinion, is it? Is that like a disclaimer?
No, I don't know. I stay away from the labels. I stay away from all this stuff, and I just try to deal with what is in the piece and what can be verified, and try to draw your own conclusions, because depending on where you go, an opinion is fact, and depending on where you go else, the next day, a fact is an opinion, and it doesn't matter. This is, but what he's presenting, and I'm sure what is going to come to the fore is all going to flesh itself out. Once again, it doesn't look very good for the can't even say the left, because this is a nonpartisan issue. It just looks really bad for the intelligence community.
Sure does. Let's go. You can start reading. Maybe we'll do it like we did in school where, you know, you would read two paragraphs and then someone else would take over.
Everybody. Well, you want to go through the whole article?
Yeah, we could stop, you know, we could stop after every little thing and start talking about it. It's important. I think it's important. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, if I start, then just stop me wherever you want to jump in, okay?
Yep.
So here we go. Multiple review. Oh, God, of course it reloaded. There goes the audio now. Okay. Multiple reviews of whether FBI agents' political bias affected the Russia-Trump collusion case remain in their infancy, but the investigators already have unearthed troubling internal communications long withheld from public view.
Okay.
Okay.
See how? Long withheld from public view. Now, my thoughts on that are they long withheld from public view because they're being hidden a la text messages? Or are they long withheld from public view because they're being used right now in an ongoing IG investigation into the FISA abuse?
If the latter is the case, why would we have seen or heard anything about them at all if we don't know anything about the conclusions of that FISA abuse investigation yet?
See, I would lean towards leaking, right? If I didn't know that Horowitz didn't release the struck page text messages. Somebody at the Justice Department did. So Horowitz provided them to the Justice Department. The Justice Department held a press conference and leaked these to the, not a televised press conference, but a press conference, and leaked these to the press, these struck page text messages that came out you know, whenever, months and months ago. So my thought is that Horowitz may have this stuff and he's given it to the Justice Department, or Solomon is getting this stuff from a leaker inside of this machine apparatus. Mm. Continue.
We already know from FBI counterintelligence agent Peter Strzok's now infamous text messages with his fellow agent and reported lover, Lisa Page, that Strzok, the man driving the Russia collusion investigation, disdained Donald Trump and expressed willingness to use his law enforcement powers to stop, that's in quotation, stop the Republican from becoming president. The question that lingers unanswered, did those sentiments affect official actions? Memos the FBI is now
producing. One second. I'm sorry. That's a hyperlink, affect official actions. Mm-hmm. When you click that hyperlink, it brings you to a news report. Justice Department watchdog said probes ongoing into disclosure of Comey memos, FBI leaks. Now, it's interesting to me that he is tying the Comey memos article to Strzok. Hmm. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, not really.
Okay. So this is real time, guys. This is not planned or anything. So just bear with us. But basically, the question that lingers unanswered, did those sentiments affect official actions? And affect official actions is underlined as a hyperlink. And then it opens up an article about an article from the Chicago Tribune by Matt Zapotsky and Devlin Barrett, and one other person I can't pronounce, that talks about the Comey memos and FBI leaking, but the Comey memos specifically, as well as a hearing and the Inspector General report. Very interesting to me that they're trying to tie Strzok possibly into Comey.
Well, it would make sense just on the level that, I mean, there was sentiments that affected official actions. I mean, we read the Comey memos and there was really nothing in there that I would have been able to surmise would justify the launching of the special counsel that he was aiming to do. So it's just I don't know. I mean, it all seems like it's driven by bias, and it all seems like it's driven by cover your ass measures, even if it's not something that you're specifically biased against any one person. I guess at that point, it doesn't matter if it's Donald Trump or if it's anybody that just presented themselves as outside of the realm of the whole Hillary, Obama, old order of things in the intelligence community kind of, you know, atmosphere and that whole environment over there of how everybody was operating. Anything at that point that was different from the old guard way of doing things is a real, real threat to all of the livelihoods and all of the, all of the legal standing of the people that are involved in the government at that point. So it really just looks a little bit more like a whole bunch of people trying to cover their asses from years and years of politicizing these agencies that are supposed to be unbiased.
Yes. And. You know, that brings up another interesting point that remember where Papadopoulos was before he came to the Trump campaign. Do you remember?
The State Department.
Well,
he
was working, you know, he has some connections there and Clinton, et cetera. But he was on Ben Carson's campaign. Ben Carson was another outsider.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that in all of the emails that we were reading from the DNC leaks, when we stumbled upon the Pied Piper strategy of trying to elevate Donald Trump because they thought that he would be the easiest to beat and the more susceptible to be taken down by their media tricks. I believe that the first phase of the Pied Piper strategy was to first get rid of Ben Carson.
Aha.
So they went up the ladder. So I guess all of their tricks work with Ben Carson. And then when it came to Donald Trump, who was supposed to be persona non grata, number one, the number one guy that they wanted to get up there. It just didn't work. They fell flat in their face.
Frank, I didn't remember that. That is massive for me as an investigator, what you just said. I'm going to have to go back to that email, pull it up, and then back engineer the facts of, you know, that's interesting to me. Know that Papadopoulos just hopped around to the Pied Piper candidates that were listed in the DNC emails?
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's where you talk about the dossiers, the dossier that in all of the opposition research that was being conducted. I mean, they were it seemed like everything was hopping from candidate to candidate. Rand Paul took care of himself. He dropped out after the first primary. But as far as that, the outsider candidates who weren't actually in government, in the Senate or the House or anything like that, it's pretty interesting to see how all of these, all of the opposition research that was being commissioned and all of these interchangeable pieces like Papadopoulos, how they were kind of migrating like parasites to hosts.
Do you remember why Fiorina dropped out?
I don't.
I'm going to have to look that up, too. You just gave me like 3 days worth of work. Thanks a lot.
You got it.
All right. So that's awesome. Let's go back here. And we were at the question that lingers unanswered. Did those sentiments affect official actions? So you go ahead now.
Okay. Are you sure you don't want to take the next couple paragraphs? I've already been speaking too much.
I could listen to your voice forever, Frank.
Okay. All right. I'll take a couple more, but please jump in at any time. Okay, here we go. Memos the FBI is now producing to the Department of Justice Inspector General and multiple Senate and House committees offer what sources involved in the production, review, or investigation described to me as damning or troubling evidence. They show Strzok and his counterintelligence team rushing in the fall of 2016 to find, quote, derogatory, end quote, information from informants or a, quote, pretext, end quote, to accelerate the probe and get a surveillance warrant on figures tied to the future president.
Okay. Memos the FBI is now producing to the Department of Justice, Inspector General, and Senate and House committees offer damning or troubling evidence. My questions here would be, is this what they've been clamoring to get their hands on? Is this what he was not allowed, Strzok was not allowed to talk about because he had an FBI lawyer sitting next to him during the testimony in front of, you know, the folks, Grassley and all them? And then rushing in the fall of 2016, let's remember what else is happening in the fall of 2016 as this is going on. The Wiener laptop.
Mm.
Which we'll talk about for sure in the next couple paragraphs. And now we're going to get into some interesting stuff here. So keep going on the rest.
All right. Sounds good. One of those figures was Carter Page, an academic and an energy consultant from New York. He was briefly a volunteer foreign policy advisor for the GOP nominee's campaign and visited Moscow the summer before the election. The memos show Strzok, Lisa Page, and others in counterintelligence monitored news articles in September 2016 that quoted a law enforcement source as saying the FBI was investigating Carter Page's travel to Moscow. The FBI team pounced on what it saw as an opportunity as soon as Page wrote a letter to then FBI Director James Comey complaining about the, quote, completely false leak. Here's another quote over here. At a minimum, the letter provides us a pretext to interview, Strzok wrote to Lisa Page on September 26th of 2016.
Now, I want to go back and see what else was going on September 26th of 2016. But until I do that, let's talk about this excuse to pounce on Page. If you remember, and I talked about this on Twitter earlier today, it seems like these letters to the FBI act as like action points, trigger points for things. For example, the Harry Reid letter that he wrote to James Comey about Russian interference in the 2016 election was a trigger point for the FBI to have an excuse to then go ahead and take over whatever the CIA was doing and look into this collusion.
Yeah. Can I just make a real quick observation here?
Yeah.
When you look at all of this, all of these quotes and all this dialogue between people like Lisa and Peter and Bill and James and Andy and all these people, and you see what's coming out, people saying we'll stop them, people saying we have a pretext or we can pounce on this, we can pounce on that. What you're looking at, I think it's what is most interesting here is that when we listen to Michael Horowitz or anybody that is sitting and examining how the FBI and their sister agencies were acting over the course of numerous investigations. And they come down to the conclusion that whereas we are able to see bias and all this stuff, we don't have a smoking gun of anybody that's actually acting on their biases in the conducting of said investigation. And whereas the bar is set so high to prove that this stuff was going on, what all of this really shows me here is that the bar was extremely low on the other hand to start launching investigations. I mean, what do you have? You're looking at people saying that, hey, we have a pretext or we have something that we can go in and actually start something, even though there's nothing really going on. So whereas there, I don't know. I guess I need to try to find a way to articulate this a little bit more.
You're doing a good job. The only thing that I'd step back for and correct quickly is that the bias that you're saying, they did find bias in Peter Strzok saying that. They did find bias in Peter Strzok's actions when he took the Russia investigation on and gave it more priority than he did to the mid-year exam. They didn't find bias in other decisions that Strzok was not involved in.
Yeah.
So the IG report specifically states that there was bias surrounding this guy and what he did. So while, yes, I agree with your point as well, they're launching counterintelligence investigations on, like, you know, I coughed in the wrong direction, my gum fell out and landed in a Russian's coffee cup. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
It's so ridiculous how the bar can be set so high on one aspect, but the bar was so low to get all of this nonsense even started. I mean, this is really just a campaign of rumors and whispers, and that's it. And when you talk about rumors and bar set so low, I mean, you just go back to CrowdStrike. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of this, the whole Russia thing is really just it started from CrowdStrike, which is a DNC, Google, Clinton-friendly organization that told the FBI, no, you can't see the DNC servers. You just have to trust us. We saw what we saw. Do you trust us? And of course, the FBI said, of course, we trust you.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. We'll go through a little segue here because a lot of interesting stuff's happened the past couple of days in regards to that DNC server and things. Basically, we've got a couple things going on. We're seeing the Awan case kind of plays into this. We're not going to get in detail about it. And also, I don't know if many people noticed, it appears that Kim.com lost his extradition case, which means that the United States can now extradite him, which means that if they do that, he will be in a position as, you know, leverage, I guess, to share information that he was unwilling to share before from inside of the country. Because you remember back in the day, he was asking, he said, I have proof that this DNC thing was not the Russians. I know it was, he was actually saying, I know it was Seth Rich and I can prove it. And he was saying that he just wanted to speak to one of these attorneys on the Mueller probe, which he never got a response to, of course, or somebody in Congress, which he never got a response to, of course. But now that he's lost this thing, he's pretty much convinced that he's on his way over here. So, you know, my conspiratorial brain says, is this just all kind of a guise to get him here to dump this info?
Hey, or I don't know. I would love to say there's definitely not going to be many people left standing in his way now that you have. We saw how James Comey stood in the way of Julian Assange trying to prove the same thing.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's another Solomon report. Yep. So let's just start thinking about, you know, I did a video the other day and I kind of explained some things about the text messages inside of Dr. John Solomon's work. I don't want to go into that right now, but because I'm very careful about those sorts of things. But let's think about where this information is coming from and what kind of people this reporter is talking to. Mm. Now, Carter Page sending this memo out to me is you can look at it one of two ways. Carter Page references this letter in his testimony to the FBI as well. I mean, to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence as well. But he says, you know, is Carter Page the poor soul who's been used as a target of an investigation, who just happens to have FBI intelligence ties, being used as an informant in the past? Or is Carter Page actively a part of this cover-up? I mean, how convenient.
It is pretty convenient.
I don't know. Anyway, so now they've got their pretext to interview because Carter Page wrote a letter to James Comey complaining about the leak that came out about his visit to Moscow. And now we have that pretext in the next paragraph that Frank will so eloquently read to you, becoming something much greater.
Where we have in one email exchange?
Within weeks.
Okay, within weeks, that pretext, often a synonym for an excuse, had been upsized to a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act FISA court warrant, giving the FBI the ability to use some of its most awesome powers to monitor Carter Page and his activities. To date, the former Trump advisor has been accused of no wrongdoing despite being subjected to nearly a year of surveillance.
Now, sorry, Frank, are you getting frustrated with me interrupting you? I'm sorry.
Absolutely not. I'm actually happy that you're doing it.
Okay. So the FISA warrant approved in, was it October? I believe it was October. There were other FISA warrants applied for previously, remember, in the summertime that were denied?
Yeah, two that were denied, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we get two FISA warrants over the summer that are denied, and then we get this warrant conveniently after there is a letter to the FBI, and the FBI can interview Carter Page that's approved. Now, we don't know if there are other FISA warrants out there hanging around that were used on other people tied to the Trump campaign. We've only been told about this Carter Page FISA warrant that was granted basically right before, I don't have the date in front of me, so I'm wrong here. I'm sure. But this was right around Election Day, and it was extended four times after that.
Yeah.
So it went through through June or July of 2017. Rod Rosenstein was one of the last people to approve the FISA warrant, and this was represented in that testy exchange with Matt Gaetz at the hearings the other day. So they're spying on Page after he's even a glimmer in the Trump campaign's eye anymore. Let's think about that for a few.
Well, I like the Dan Bongino and other people's the perspective they put on all of that stuff. As far as Carter Page being a known, already being a very easily known entity to the FBI, having worked with the FBI as late as spring of 2016. Knowing that that work actually dealt with Russian interests, so it would be easy to be able to make a link there, or at least some kind of a guilt by association fervor that you can build up around him. But also that two-hop rule. I mean, as long as you get somebody inside the campaign, I mean, you are seriously. If you have a FISA warrant out on one person in the campaign, of course you're going to be 2 degrees of separation away from the president-elect or the candidate themselves, because you're already 1 degree of separation away from the campaign manager. So it's in the, of course, the campaign manager is 1 degree of separation away from the candidate. So
who doesn't use email?
I mean, so it's really interesting. So I think that at the bare minimum, it makes sense that if they can just get a warrant on one person in that campaign, you could pretty much monitor anybody.
It's just interesting to me, and a lot of people get frustrated with me doing this, but it's interesting to me that they choose somebody already connected to a kind of high-level Russian sting. Now, this is not the only person that's got intelligence ties that's involved in this, okay? If it were just Carter Page, and he's the only one that's worked with the FBI in the past, then I'd be like, okay, but it's Carter Page, it's Oleg Deripaska, it's Felix Sater, there's like, it's Stefan Halper, there's all of these people that have been informants and worked at a very high level with the Justice Department as, you know, as CIs before. It's not just Carter Page, there's like six of them that we know about.
But it's a conspiracy. It's of a conspiracy. Course. You bring all that up.
Big conspiracy theory. I mean, I don't even know how people still listen to us with this garbage we're spewing.
I don't know.
Anyway, so in one, you're at in one, Frank, in one.
In one, let me see here. Where the hell are we at? Oh.
Oh, no, I'm wrong. Some internal.
Damn, did I get all this wrong? Oh, here, some internal memos detail the pressure being applied by the FBI to DOJ prosecutors to get the warrant on Carter Page buttoned up before Election Day. In one email exchange with the subject line, Crossfire FISA, Strzok and Lisa Page discussed talking points to get then-FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe to persuade a high-ranking DOJ official to sign off on the warrant. Crossfire Hurricane was one of the code names for four separate investigations the FBI conducted related to Russia matters into the 2016 election.
Okay. How many do we... Did you know there were four?
No.
I didn't know there were four. I thought there was one.
Yeah, I don't know.
What are they doing? What are they doing?
And what are the dates that those separate investigations all started? That would pretty much elongate the timeline here. Remember, this all started out, and we've talked about this before, the marriage between the intelligence community and the DNC, or the Uniparty, pretty much, and of course the media. That marriage, that little triumvirate right there between those three, has been completely confirmed. And where it started out, we're talking about this dossier. When the dossier started becoming a very, very heated debate about its validity and its origin and its funding and who was involved and what was really going on there, of course, the spin then said, oh, no, the dossier was nothing. The counterintelligence investigation started on July 31st with Papadopoulos. So now we're pushing it back. It goes to July 31st now. I would love to see. Well, love to see the dates on these.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that this entire time, people like me and you and everyone have been going off the assumption there was this one counterintelligence operation against, you know, the Trump campaign or, you know, Crossfire Hurricane that we found out through the New York Times, right? But we've been saying they're lying about when this started, and everybody's been saying it. There's no way this started in July. Maybe this one did. And there were other ones that were, like, for example, I found a text message between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page where he says, we're going from the Patriot Act to wire carrying current. And that was in April of 2016. So that basically meant that happened to coincide exactly with when Admiral Rogers took away 702 query access for contractors. So I said, this gives credence to the story that this operation started way before July. But maybe there was an ongoing one already that wasn't that one. And we're going to learn as we keep reading this that there's another name thrown out there about this stuff. So let's you're at a minimum, I believe, correct?
Here's a quote from Peter Strzok. Quote. At a minimum, that keeps the hurry the F up pressure on him. Strzok emailed Page on October 14th, 2016, less than 4 weeks before Election Day. Also around this time, this is where they were also keeping all of the Wiener discoveries, tried to keep that under wraps as long as they can. So they're also trying to delay some things. They're trying to delay some damaging discoveries in New York while they're trying to accelerate all of their nonsense elsewhere with the Russia stuff. 4 days later, the same team was emailing about rushing to get approval for another FISA warrant for another Russia-related investigation, codenamed Dragon. Quote, still an expedite? End quote. One of the emails beckoned as the FBI tried to meet the requirements of a process known as a Woods review before a FISA warrant can be approved by the courts.
Now, hold on now. Okay, a couple things just hit my head, and I'm going to go through them with you one by one. As you were reading that, the first thing that hit my head was Rod Rosenstein said in his testimony that he doesn't think that the press reporting on the warrant that he signed matches up with what the warrant actually said. Maybe he wasn't renewing the warrant for Carter Page. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm not following.
Okay. supposedly, we thought that Rod Rosenstein was responsible for renewing the Carter Page Pfizer warrant in July of 2017.
Right. Okay. Yes.
He told Matt Gaetz during that testimony that his recollection of what was in that warrant doesn't meet press reports of what they said was in it.
Okay.
So the press reports say it was another Carter Page extension. But what we just read here is that obviously there's another FISA warrant, at least one out there floating around for a Russia-related investigation, codenamed Dragon. Now, my thought process goes immediately to Michael Flynn with this FISA warrant. Because if you remember, in James Comey's memos, which are also referenced here in that hyperlink above that we were talking about, and you guys are kind of walking through how my brain works during something like this because I haven't done this yet. This is all kind of organic coming out of me. Bear with me. If you remember, he referenced the Comey memos. And inside the Comey memos, we learned that Reince Priebus asked James Comey if there was a FISA warrant on General Flynn. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
So that would mean that they knew about this stuff, the administration knew about it, or thought they knew about it, very early on, right after Inauguration Day. So I think that maybe they're talking about a FISA warrant on somebody like, possibly, a Michael Flynn.
Interesting.
Which would lend itself very nicely to the Peter Strzok-Contreras connection.
Yes. Yes, it would. Rudy.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So, any idea?
Okay, here's a quote from Strzok to Page. Any idea what time he can have it woodsed by? Quote, I know it's not going to matter because the DOJ is going to take the time the DOJ wants to take. I just don't want this waiting on us at all. Until all of the interviews are completed by Congress and the DOJ's Inspector General later this year, we won't know why counterintelligence agents who normally take a methodical approach to investigation felt so much pressure days before the election on this case. Were they concerned about losing a chance to gather evidence at a critical moment? Or maybe, as some Republicans have long suspected, they wanted to impact the election.
There's John Solomon's
opinion
disclaimer right there. Very smart. Now I understand why he's doing it. He's giving himself, you know, kind of a buffer zone there. The way I look at this is he's giving himself a liability buffer.
Mm. A CYA.
Pretty much. He has to throw that sentence in there. I don't even think that he wanted to. You know what I mean? The way the piece reads, it seems like that's a thrown in piece to be labeled, to have it be labeled opinion.
Right.
Anyway, not that that really matters. It's just my brain. Go ahead.
Well, we're almost there. The agents got the Carter Page warrant in October, and within 2 weeks, Democrats in Congress, such as then Senator Harry Reid and some media members, were raising questions about the FBI withholding word of a probe that could hurt Trump. FBI agents monitored those reports too. The day after Trump's surprising win on November 9th, 2016, the FBI counterintelligence team engaged in a new mission, bluntly described in another string of emails prompted by another news leak. Quote, we need all of the names to scrub and we should give them ours for the same purpose, end quote. Strzok emailed Page on November 10th, 2016, citing a Daily Beast article about some of the former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort's allegedly unsavory ties overseas.
Now, do you see how big that is? I don't think many people are realizing how big that is.
Put it into context.
So basically, the Daily Beast puts out a story, which I just opened, and it says, Paul Manafort thrown from Trump crazy train. By the time Donald Trump brought in Steve Bannon, Paul Manafort was already dead. And it goes through and talks about Paul Manafort resigning from the campaign and what a, quote, shit show it was. And this was written on, looks like, August 19th. I don't think this is the right article he linked in here. Anyway, long story short, what they're talking about in here is scrubbing history of some kind. because of this leak in the Daily Beast, which I am still trying to figure out if the person who leaked to the Daily Beast did it at the behest of the Strzok page so that they'd have a reason to know, you know, to go back and clean up, or if they realize we need to wipe ourselves from any connection to Paul Manafort and also all the people connected to Paul Manafort, because this story came out that's not very pleasing for Paul Manafort. I have been maintained from day one that Paul Manafort was a plant inside the Trump campaign. I think that this means that they're trying to clean up any evidence that connects them to Paul Manafort.
You're talking about the intelligence community.
Yes. We need all of their names to scrub, and we should give them ours for the same purpose. Who them is, I'm assuming maybe a friendly in the NSA, a friendly inside the Bureau, like somebody that can kind of get rid of evidence, right? Andy didn't get any others, Paige wrote back, apparently indicating McCabe didn't have any names to add to the scrub. What are they scrubbing and why connected to Manafort? Because they put him there. That's my opinion.
So Manafort would be one of theirs. When
yes.
they say give them ours for the same purpose, Manafort may have been theirs?
No, I think he yes, there would be probably anybody in the connection circle to him in regards to the Ukraine, including Oleg Deripaska, who was also one of ours, in quotes. Mm-hmm. Because Oleg Deripaska was also an FBI informant.
Yeah.
As John Solomon reported previously, do you see the kind of tangent the stories that he's releasing are taking?
Absolutely.
So basically what they're saying is we need all of the names like that we're working with struck my interpretation of this anyway. It's very unclear because we don't have any more context in terms of what this email said. But what I'm reading this as is Manafort's circle of compadres and Strzok Page circle of compadres, anybody they talked to about this, anybody that had any information about them working with Manafort inside the campaign in terms of electronic communications. In other words, the dirty laundry is being aired out now. We have to cover our tracks. He won. We're in even deeper trouble than we were before. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next paragraph will give more to this.
Okay. Strzok says, he starts off, that's what Bill said. Strzok wrote back, apparently referring to then FBI Chief of Counterintelligence William Priestap. I suggested we need to exchange our entire lists as we each have potential derogatory CI, confidential informants, information the other doesn't. Mm-hmm. CI is short for confidential informants. It's an extraordinary exchange, if for no other reason than this. The very day after Trump wins the presidency, some top FBI officials are involved in the sort of gumshoeing normally reserved for field agents, and their goal is to find derogatory information about someone who had worked for the president-elect. As
I don't read it that way. I don't read it that way. That's weird. I mean, he would know better than me, but I don't think that that's what's being said in that paragraph. I suggested we need to exchange our entire list as we have each have potential derogatory CI info, the other doesn't. Meaning that they all have information on confidential informants that won't look good for them, so they need to get rid of it.
Hmm.
Like, they're planting these people inside the campaign. We know that that's happening. That's not conjecture. That's actually happening. We know it. These people are in charge of running this so-called investigation into Russian collusion, which we actually know was the "we'll stop him" effort, right?
Right.
So now that he won, he talks to Priestap, and Priestap says, you know, or even Strzok and Page, like, they've all got their connects to these CIs that are working inside the campaign. They've all got an electronic footprint with them. We have to clean this up now.
Yeah, but wait a second. But if they're all calling all of their banners, the Stephen Halpers, the anybody out there who is working as confidential informants, that they're trying to pull things in to put together a derogatory reports or launch investigations, if their investigations were to have the impact that they were desiring to destroy President-elect Trump or President Trump if he were actually to get in, then how far would they have ever expected this to go if this was going to run its course eventually all of the informants and all of the actual connections that they had to this information would have had to been outed and fleshed out, and all of the ties to each other and back to the intelligence community themselves would have eventually been – all the dots would have been connected anyway. So I don't understand how you can scrub anything where if you're going to actually make the investigation or all of these efforts come together and be an effective anti-Trump measure – eventually, I mean, how can you scrub any of that? You need to be able to put names to information, and once you have those names, you're going to be able to see how they all connect.
But this happened after Trump won the scrubbing email. You know, I understand what you're saying. I am definitely doing a poor job of explaining what I'm trying to say. Let's stop for a second and let me see if I can do it better. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? You may not understand what I'm trying to say. And even if you do, your point is still valid.
I'm probably – listen, all this is very, very sticky, so I get confused very easily. All I'm seeing is when I'm reading these people talking to each other saying we got to scrub this, scrub that, I mean what they're scrubbing is the only quote and end quote evidence they ever had of wrongdoing with the Trump campaign. So if that's the only evidence that they've had, or all the material that they've been able to use this entire time to reverse engineer some kind of a crime, then how the hell did they ever expect to really even wrap this thing up if eventually they're going to have to reveal their sources, and their sources have bias and internal, you know, fuckery written all over it?
You know what's funny? You're absolutely right. And that's the thing that I think is very, very glaring here, is that if that's the case, Frank, and what you're saying is true, remember, Robert Mueller took over the Crossfire Hurricane investigation from the FBI. That's what he was tasked with doing. He took that investigation over. If they're going back and trying to get rid of all the people they planted inside of the campaign and, like you say, delete all that evidence, because that's what this paragraph says. I don't know why John Solomon is reading it any differently. To me, it doesn't read that way at all, the way he's suggesting. To me, it reads like they're saying, oh, shit, we have to cover our asses now because this guy's in office and this is all going to come out, and we need to make sure that any information that we had that makes it look bad on us, that we were talking to these people about being CIs inside this campaign, then what is Mueller investigating?
Okay, well then the only thing, in to my untrained eye and ear, the only thing I can come up with, because this none of this makes sense to me, is that at this point, the only game plan I can think of is, it becomes, and for any of our football fans out there, you'll know what I'm talking about, it really seems like it's becoming a run out the clock scenario where we have to clean up and delay and make sure we bury all of our sources that we use to launch all these counterintelligence investigations, run out the clock and try to get our asses with the help of our media to the midterms to create as much suspicion for this president and his team as possible to try to be able to create some effective campaigns, reclaim the House, and trigger impeachment. It's the only thing I can think of, because if we were actually going to follow these investigations to their rightful conclusion and put all the cards out on the table, this looks awful for the people investigating Trump. It just seems like a run out the clock scenario for the midterms.
Could be. I'm gonna read this next one, because this one really, really, really gets me, and I don't have a name. But here it goes. As the president-elect geared up to take over, the FBI made another move that has captured investigators' attention. It named an executive with expertise in the FBI's most sensitive surveillance equipment to be a liaison to the Trump transition. On its face, that seems odd. Technical surveillance nerds aren't normally the first picks for plum political assignments. Even odder, the FBI counterintelligence team running the Russia-Trump collusion probe seemed to have an interest in the appointment. Now, do you remember that Trump's transition team picked their asses up and moved to Bedminster, New Jersey?
Yes, indeed.
The day after they met with Admiral Mike Rogers?
The Saint Rogers. Yes, Saint Rogers.
Saint Rogers. So they've got somebody who specializes in surveillance, assisting the Trump campaign, who is just now elect. Their president-elect Trump gets settled in his transition. Admiral Rogers goes there, talks to Trump about, you know, whatever it is we speculate he talked to him about. The very next day, Trump says, screw all this Trump Tower nonsense. I'm taking myself to Bedminster where nobody knows that I'm going and I have full control. What was that counterintelligence, you know, technical surveillance expert doing in the transition? Continuing to spy?
Don't know.
So these and other documents are still being disseminated to various oversight bodies in Congress, and more revelations are certain to occur. Yet now irrefutable proof exists that the agents that sought to create pressure to get, quote, derogatory information and a, quote, pretext to interview people close to a president they didn't like. I don't agree with that. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. It doesn't make sense to me.
Why wouldn't that make sense? It seems irrefutable to me that, I mean, that's what they're doing.
He's quoting the word derogatory in the same way as he used it above in the paragraph above. And I don't agree with what he's saying in the paragraph above. I don't think he's not reporting what that actually means, in my opinion. I think it's purpose. It's on purpose.
Okay.
Just my opinion. Clear evidence also exists that that an investigation into still unproven collusion between a foreign power and a U.S. presidential candidate was driven less by secret information from Moscow and more by politically tainted media leaks. And that means the dots between expressions of political bias and official actions just got a little more connected. A little more connected.
Man, oh man.
Whew.
It's big.
I mean, this article is massive, and its implications are massive.
Yeah, it really is. But I don't know. I think it really all comes down to, like I said, I don't see any other purpose for any of this stuff because it's so faulty and it's so self-incriminating for the intelligence community. That really just looks like a run-out-the-clock scenario. It's all about the midterms. It's the last play right there because, I mean, you look at the polls today, how immigration is a top issue for voters. So what do you think? Here you go. It's all about the midterms. It's all about the – nobody's covering this. I'm actually surprised that The Hill is actually allowing any of this stuff to be published on there because they have been – they're 96% in the other direction. But very interesting stuff.
You know, I muzzled you before we talk about the immigration thing, because we've got about 7 minutes. Before we talk about the immigration thing, because I want to, I muzzled you earlier about that. But I also wanted to say, let's think about this for a second. They didn't think that Trump was going to lose, right?
Win.
Right. Win. Sorry. So why were they... Was this the insurance policy, all of these in people inside of his campaign and everything else? Like, why go through all this effort if they didn't think that he was going to win?
I asked the same thing. I asked myself the same thing a couple of times over the last few months. It seems like an insurance policy. That almost seems like, you know how it's a frequently used example of a con job where somebody shows up at your front door and tries to sell you volcano insurance, something that you know, okay, well, this is really, I mean, why the hell are we going to spend any money on this volcano insurance, you know, especially if you're in a, you know, where the hell else? This seems like volcano insurance. Why are they expending so much political capital and leaving themselves potentially so exposed for a campaign that they were all sure would go the other way? What I really believe that this is, it may just be this, because I've seen somebody say just today, you know, Trump's at 48% approval ratings. Any poll you see, give Trump 10% more.
Yeah.
I believe that all of the internal polling that every outlet out there was doing, part of the propaganda campaign out there was the psychological warfare of getting voters to think that there was absolutely no way that Trump was going to win just by putting out their stupid poll numbers to get people to not even go out and vote on election day. I think that the people who are in charge, they need to know the real truth. And I believe that they knew that Trump was trending in very, very key areas in a strong way. And they knew that there might be need for volcano insurance because the volcano was going to erupt. I think that they were the only ones that knew the real polling data. So maybe that could have been it. I have to just speculate because what the hell else could it have been?
Yeah, it has to be because it's a lot of work to go through between the Democrats and the Steele dossier. And it's almost as if they knew he was going to win, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think so.
It's just an interesting point. Like, I just think about sometimes all the resources and the people and the fervor and the, you know, the people writing letters and the confidential informants and the, you know, nobody, you know, Five Eyes involvement in the UK and New Zealand and Australia, and everybody's involved and the whole world is campaigning to stop this man from becoming president. It was a global effort to stop him. Global. Crazy. Mm. Crazy. Let's talk about those immigration numbers, because you were on a tear right before we started, and I implored you to hold your passion for the show, and now we are almost an hour in, and I want you to get some of that out. So it's yours for the next couple minutes on this immigration deal.
It's both of ours in this way, because it really just – it ties into everything we're talking about here. What are people covering? And I just talked about – I reiterated that marriage – between the media and between the Uniparty and between the intelligence community, and how they're all working together, trying to get out ahead of stories, shifting positions, moving the goalposts, whatever the hell it is. Once you're on their trail, they shift and they, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's they create oases and just illusions and all that stuff. And that's exactly where it's at. And then how here we have immigration becoming a top issue for voters. We know, once again, because the media, the Rip Van Winkle media, who goes to sleep for years on end and then wakes up and says, whoa, we're in trouble. We have record low unemployment. We're starting to really ramp up manufacturing jobs. I mean, there's so many things that are going on that are really, really positive that everybody can take a part in. And immigration now, you see that there's like 58% disapproval that they're polling, even on Fox News polls, 58% disapproval of how Trump is handling immigration for something that has been a precedent for multiple administrations already. And it really is just so it's just one of those things I can't
Immigration debacle and who they're deciding to like tie their horses to or their leashes to in terms of this moving forward, i.e. Ocasio in New York. You know what I mean? Like the abolish ICE thing, the whole thing is just it's frustrating. Do they really want to sink on that? Do they think it's working, Frank?
I don't know. I mean, all I know is that whether or not they think it's working, all they care about is whether or not they can put some poll numbers up that reflects poorly on the president. They will jump onto any boat. They don't care what direction the boat is going in. They don't care if the boat is sinking. As long as it gives them at least a temporary edge on a president they want to just see destroyed. It really isn't even one of those things where you have to be a Trump cheerleader to see what's going on. I mean, to see Bill Maher and people like him saying, I hope that the economy tanks. I hope that we all go down in flames just so that the Trump success or the successes that are going on playing out before our eyes can be soiled in some way. That is some real, real interesting stances to be taken there. And also because they keep all of their voters and they keep their activist fringe types in their corner in such a state of infantilism. I mean, think about this woman from the Congo that climbed up the base of the Statue of Liberty on July 4th. To think about somebody climbing up the base of the 4th of July, protesting against immigration and custom enforcement on the base of a statue that was the first thing that many immigrants saw as they arrived at Ellis Island to be processed in compliance with immigration law, which is the only thing that ICE is set up to do, to make sure that immigration law is enforced, is just the ultimate irony. But they don't see that because they're infants. All they don't have any arguments. They don't have any kind of responsible stances on or perspectives on history. They just stomp and kick their feet and they climb things. It's like they're throwing a temper tantrum in the frozen food aisle at the AMP or something like that. They're children.
When they're asked about this stuff too, point blank asked about it, they're like silent. They don't know what to. They don't know. They don't. They're clueless. And yeah, I saw that whole thing. Ay, ay, ay. Hey, listen. Another week down the tubes. That was a great way to end it, by the way. This was a good one, right?
I had a great time. Listen, that whole article really filled up the hour. Great.
Yeah, it did. I was surprised, but there was a lot to talk about in that thing. And it would, like I said, again, disclaimer, that was the first time I had kind of run through those thoughts. So I'm sure they'll change. But there you go. You got a little window into an analysis there. And thanks for listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frank.
I thought you were Shankly.
Shankly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Beans. You can hear the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and on Google Play and RadioInfluence.com. We will be back next week. And actually, won't we be together? We will.
What, for next week?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're going to actually be back in the Northeast.
I am. It's a big secret, but I'm on my way back up there. We got some stuff planned. So yeah, we'll probably be recording together instead of virtually. Interesting.
That'll be great.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk to you guys soon. Hope you enjoyed it. And thanks so much for your support.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
4th of July, I'm never leaving my house. Somebody at Busch Gardens got shot from a celebratory gunfire. You're just going to shoot gun up in the air? What does that accomplish exactly? And we're talking about a bullet that can travel 2 to 5 miles. So there's been so many situations where people have got shot miles and miles from where somebody shot a gun. Why would you go out on 4th of July? I'm not doing it. If somebody could shoot me 5 miles away, why would you leave the house? And there's so many situations of people getting blown up now. There's legal fireworks, illegal fireworks. It's all dumb. I don't know if other countries are as dumb as us. I really don't.
You can find Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.